From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is U.S. Farm Report.
Welcome to U.S. Farm Report this Easter weekend. I'm Ty Morgan, and here's what's in store over the next 60 minutes. A surprising twist and answers to the mystery illness in cattle that we first told you about last week.
A strain of avian influenza was identified in some samples from affected dairy cows. And that's really what we know right now.
But there is some good news as the animal industry searches for more answers. We have the latest. From USDA's first official look at acreage to surprises in cattle on feed, there was a lot of movement in the markets and a lot to digest. Fighting fires, but with soybean meal.
I was impressed with this. I was the knockdown ability to knock down the fire. The fire, we weren't able to relight it, and which was very impressive.
And this Easter weekend, we're celebrating one individual who's a barn hero.
I had no idea what I was getting into. It's never what you think it is.
Her giving spirit that's uplifting to those she's around.
U.S. Farm Report, presented by Pioneer. What's next happens when the name on a cap matches the power of one's purpose. Pioneer, what's next happens here.
We begin with a story we've been following since it first broke. Some dairy cattle coming down with an illness in the Southern Plains, and we now have answers. Officials finding three positive samples of the illness carried by wild birds were from unpasteurized milk samples in Kansas and Texas. A veterinarian tells me the reported symptoms in Texas, Kansas, and New Mexico include cows simply quit eating, and milk production declines about 20%. For at least 3 weeks. After that, the herd returns to 95 to 97% of previous production. Other symptoms previously reported in some herds include mastitis and colostrum-like milk, and it appears to be an issue mainly in older dairy cows. USDA APHIS wants to emphasize there is no concern about the safety of the nation's milk supply or any risk to consumer health. We're going to have much more on the investigation in our next half hour. And another health concern, this time when it comes to goats. Minnesota reporting a juvenile goat tested positive for highly pathogenic avian influenza, and that was the first known case in mammals. It's reported the goat lived on a farm in Stevens County in the same area where a poultry flock tested positive for the illness late last month, sharing the same pasture and sole water source. The case is still under investigation, but experts at the University of Minnesota Extension are recommending producers check their biosecurity practices and not allow poultry, waterfowl, and wildlife to share water sources or feed. USDA's prospective plantings report puts corn acres at just over 90 million acres, up more than 4.5 million from last year. And that was really the biggest surprise, with nine states seeing declines in the double digits, the biggest decrease in Arkansas, with corn acres down 27% from last year. Intended soybean acres, according to USDA's survey, is 86.5 million, up 3% from last year. Wheat seedings down 4% from 2023 to 47.49 million. And USDA's updated look at grain stocks shows corn stocks are below what the trade expected at 8.35. Soybean stocks were slightly above what the trade expected. Wheat stocks also coming in higher. Report reaction is coming up in our marketing roundtables. Well, more bad news for Iowa, with John Deere announcing 300 people will be laid off at its plant in Waterloo. The employees expecting to be let go indefinitely at the end of April. The Des Moines Register reporting the workers are primarily production staff. Deere saying the layoffs are necessary for optimizing the workforce at his factories in Waterloo. That location currently employs about 5,500 people. This announcement follows a previous decision to lay off about 150 people in Ankeny. Deere is currently projecting earnings of $7.5 to $7.75 billion this year, down about $2.5 billion from a year ago. And the cattle market broke another record when it came to prices last week. Last Friday, the North led the way with sales reaching as high as $191 per hundredweight for live cattle. The record hit ahead of a new bearish cattle on feed report. USDA putting the number of cattle and calves on feed at 11.8 million head as of March 1st. That's up 1% from the previous year. Placements came in at 1.89 million head, seen in red on this chart. That's up 10% and the highest for February since the series began in 1996. The placement number coming at a surprise to many.
In January, we actually had a relatively low placement number. That was due to the winter storms that we had across the Midwest that came in early January, which delayed some of those placements. So some of the increase that we saw in placements during February was the fact that we were making up for some of the weather incidents that occurred during January.
Prices dropped on Tuesday on those higher placements, along with the market jitters about the avian flu issue in dairy. Vessel traffic in and out of the Port of Baltimore was suspended until further notice after a cargo ship hit a bridge, causing it to collapse into the river. The ship colliding with Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge. Mike Steenhook, the executive director of the Soy Transportation Coalition, talking to Chip Flory on AgriTalk about how much ag trade goes through the Port of Baltimore.
Soybean exports, about 200,000 is a good rough number of metric tons of soybeans are exported from the Port of Baltimore. That's in via containers. They really don't have bulk exports to speak of. Well, you compare that to the Mississippi Gulf region near New Orleans, 35 million metric tons of soybean exports in that region. So that's our number one export region. So it doesn't accommodate a lot in terms of agricultural exports. There's some soybean imports that actually occur to the Port of Baltimore.
While the Port of Baltimore is not a significant port for soybeans and grain, it is a significant location for the broader economy as the leading port for the import and export of cars and light trucks. It's Easter weekend, but we saw snow this week from California to Oklahoma to Minnesota. We'll have a check of your crazy weather forecast next.
U.S. Farm Report weather is brought to you by H&S Manufacturing. Maximize baleage yield with less time and effort with the LW1100 Line Wrap Bale Wrapper. You can wrap round or square bales, and the automatic operating mode allows for a one-person operation.
Meteorologist Matt Engelbrecht joining us now with weather. Matt, for our viewers who were bummed they didn't see a white Christmas, well, it seems Mother Nature's making up for it with a white Easter. Some areas of Minnesota seeing more snow in March than they did the entire winter.
Yeah, we're keeping an eye on what's going on with the jet stream. We'll call it a little bit more active jet stream, meaning we're getting more ridges and troughs across the United States in kind of a 7 to 8 day period. So what that means is that we're going to see temperatures fluctuate, but more importantly, more widespread rain in and across the United States. Show you what I mean. Now, so just looking at this map right here, Sunday and Monday, most of the United States is going to be dominated by a ridge of high pressure. You see how we kind of get this little bit of a hump right across the United States. Well, back behind me on the West Coast, we get that trough, that dive, that big U near California. So follow this energy with me. And when you have the upper level support, which what we have with a low pressure system at the surface, now those are the small ingredients we look for, especially Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, for more widespread showers. And of course, the possibility of some stronger thunderstorms as we start to kind of stack that sandwich. Gets a little bit more tastier. Same situation, for my opinion, when we start to look at the jet stream. If we stack from the surface all the way up to the jet stream, we get that support. That is the kind of ingredients we look for widespread showers, perhaps isolated severe thunderstorms, but more impacts over a greater area when you have this kind of shape in the jet stream. So again, that's on Monday. By Tuesday and Wednesday, that energy is going to continue to move to the east and phase with some colder air back up here towards Canada. So you see how these lines tilt all the way back down here towards the west and the southwest. At the surface, what's going on at the surface, because it's the jet stream, what we're doing is tracking a cold front coming through. A cold front matched up with some upper level support could spell a possibility of some severe weather, but also widespread showers right along that boundary. And remember, I mentioned a bit of an active pattern. This is on Wednesday. It's going to take until Thursday and Friday for the influences for this trough and low pressure system to move out. And you're already starting to see some ridging back out here towards the west. Still too early to tell, but if that ridge holds, we'd be looking at a quiet weather pattern going into next weekend. So that puts us at next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with another trough starting to show up in the top left corner of your screen.
Thanks, Matt. Well, a couple major reports from USDA to end the week. What were the surprises and where do we go from here? Matt Bennett and Joe Vaklovic join me next. Welcome back to U.S. Farm Report this weekend. Well, a very big report week. Several reports to go through. We have Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net as well as Joe Vaklovic of Standard Grain to go through everything. All right, guys, as expected, USDA survey found farmers intend to plan plant less corn and more soybeans this year. But when you look at the principal crop acres, that's down more than 6 million year over year. Was that the biggest surprise, Matt?
Yeah, I believe it was a big surprise. The biggest surprise for me, of course, was 90 million acres of corn. We thought that corn acres wouldn't be near as high as what some of the other folks have been saying. First of all, last fall was a fantastic fall for field work. We know that a lot of folks got a lot of stuff done, but the economics of the situation have changed quite a bit. So we felt like that would temper these corn acres somewhat. Our estimate was 91.5, but it was a big surprise to come out with 90, and a trade was certainly surprised by it. And so you see a little bit of price reaction there. You know, as we went to record this, actually prices were substantially stronger. And I think that it shows you that the trade, you know, with an average trade guess well above this 90, certainly was a surprise as well.
We all know a lot can change, Joe, but for now, does this change the momentum of the markets?
I think it could. You've got a big fund short in the corn market in particular, and maybe some of these large money managers are going to look at this situation or take a second look at this situation following the report. That being said, what I did after the report was I took the new acreage numbers. I punched it into the USDA Ag Outlook Forum balance sheet for new crop corn, and it's still a bearish situation. I mean, it's still a 2 billion plus carryout and a 15 or 16% stocks to use ratio. That being said, it makes things a little bit more sensitive. If you were to run into a weather problem or some better demand, it makes things a little bit more sensitive. I think there's a strong likelihood that you see a significant acreage shift in the June report, but for now, yeah, it's absolutely supportive.
Matt, you talked about the big surprise when it came to corn acres. Soybean acres, though, was it pretty much in line with what the trade expected?
It was, you know, 86.5 on soybeans, pretty much where everyone thought this was going to be. You know, I think when you look at this was as of March 1. And so I stop and think about what was a farmer's mentality as of March 1, because it's obviously a survey-based approach. And, you know, corn hadn't started rallying yet. Corn started rallying the week of Commodity Classic, you know, right there at the end of February, 1st of March. And I got to think that the farmer's mentality was, I don't even want to plant corn. So I think Joe's right in that you could see a pretty good size shift, especially if you get some strength in this corn market going over to soybeans. I mean, not really seeing a whole lot of anything go on there as far as the market's concerned, which probably makes sense. In fact, I think that the bean market would have maybe struggled a little bit if it wouldn't have been for so much strength in the corn and wheat market. So bottom line is, I think the bean number, it's not friendly whatsoever. I mean, I wouldn't say it's super bearish, but you got to think you got a pretty good size carryout. Now you're piling 86.5 million acres on top of it. So you've got to think that you could have some tough sledding ahead as far as this bean situation goes with more acres.
Well, USDA also showing that wheat seedings, those intentions, those are down 4% from 2023. Intended cotton acres, those are actually on the rise. That's up 4% from last year. I mean, we had a lot of acreage numbers. It wasn't just corn and beans. We had a lot of acreage numbers come out with the prospective plantings report, Joe. But how accurate is this report typically?
It's not accurate. USDA will be the first to tell you that they don't, they're not big fans of this report. They know that they don't start to get a feel for the acreage situation until June. And even after that, there's precedent for sizable adjustments. You could see corn acreage adjusted 2 million in October. For all I know, it's happened before. So this is a starting point. And for the moment, these are the numbers until we see new numbers in June.
All right. Well, we also had grain stocks that came out Thursday. We had cattle on feed this week. Like I said, it was just a lot of reports to digest this week. So we'll talk about more of that coming up right after the break.
U.S. Farm Report is brought to you by Germinator Steel Closing Wheels. Perfected in conventional, excels in no-till. Order your Germinator Closing Wheels today.
Welcome back. All right, going through more USDA report, kind of this data dump that we had Thursday, looking at quarterly grain stocks, what was the biggest surprise for you, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, it was corn, actually. So obviously, we talk about corn having a friendly report on acreage, but that's not where all the friendly numbers came in. The average trade guess on stocks were actually 80 million bushels above where they came in at for quarterly stocks. So that tells you disappearance for corn has been pretty strong. We do know ethanol margins been running good. Most weeks we've been running ahead of the pace that we would need to meet the USDA goal, which tells me that you could see some adjustments there. And so there's no no doubt that disappearance was better than what the average trader thought that it would be. And so I would call the stocks number a little bit friendly on corn as well.
All right, so a friendlier number with corn when it came to stocks, a friendlier number when it came to acreage. Now that we have these reports, Joe, what is the market focused on?
I guess we're going to move toward, we'll continue to focus on demand, planting conditions, maybe weather as it relates to the second corn crop in Brazil, and what sort of changes you see to these acreage numbers in June. The U.S. growing season, as it relates to corn in particular, it's the biggest deal on the planet by a wide margin. So, you know, you can talk about the balance sheets and all that stuff all you want, but you run into a weather issue and everything changes. We saw it last year. It may only last for 2 weeks, but that's going to be the big thing here for the next 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, Matt, when I go out and I talk to a lot of farmers right now, I mean, a lot of them are concerned about grain prices, but weather is a big concern. We know it is dry in some of these places, not a lot of subsoil moisture, but it seems like that's pretty well advertised, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's certainly a story that we all know. And if you ask your average grower, hey, what do you want to see for a spring? At this stage of the game, the last thing they want to see is subsoil moisture getting replenished, which means you're going to run into a wet spring. So, you know, I've got to think that as far as weather's concerned, it's something to keep in the back of your head. You want to have some reserves. You want to have some subsoil moisture. But at the same time, I don't think, I just think it's way too early in the game to get too awful worried about that personally. And so moving forward, I think it'll be a thing that we could trade. But I think that you're going to have to get closer to pollination before people are going to be too awful worried about it.
Well, Joe, we saw the big weather story last year. I mean, how big of a story drought was and still the record corn crop that we had. But with the fund positions this year, do you think the market will be more sensitive or less sensitive?
No, dry weather's bearish until the third week in May. In 2012, dry weather was bearish until the third week in June. The trade's going to look at the dry weather and say, you know, plant in the dust and the bins will bust. I mean, that's what traders are going to think. That's how they've handled drought historically. Historically, they don't get worried about this until late May or even into late June in the case of 2012. So I would argue if anything, it might be a non-issue to a bearish issue for the next, call it, 2 months.
All right, Matt, when it came to the acreage report, grain stocks, you know, we're in March Madness right now with basketball. There wasn't a lot of madness, didn't see a lot of complaints. However, when it came to the cattle on feed report, there were some issues, some analysts concerned about why those placements were up so much. What is the biggest question mark right now when it comes to cattle?
Placements were up. Whenever you look at what happened for January numbers, actually, those numbers were a little bit higher than what the trade was actually expecting. And so we had to think that you come in here to these numbers and, you know, bottom line is you had like 92, 93 for February. Okay. Some people thought it could be even lower yet, but you knew a lot of these cattle got pulled forward. So a 105, 106 isn't exactly shocking. I think that part of what was going on this week, you know, is that, you know, obviously the flu situation, definitely concerning for the market. And I just think that we've been overcooked for long enough that you just ran out of buyers. And so this market certainly looks susceptible, especially with a monthly reversal, which certainly is on the table as we talk. With that being the case, I would expect you could see some weakness in this cattle market moving forward.
All right, we need to take a quick break and we'll have much more right here.
Hey, welcome back to Tractor Tales, folks. This week, we're headed to North Dakota to check out a classic John Deere 60.
People just are kind of inquisitive about why it only has one tire in front. Just because it was rare for this part of the country. I think when you had a single tire, it came from growing specialty crops. They could straddle the rows and not take up much space so that the tire wasn't running on top of the rows, the vegetables or whatever they were growing. And this one also has fenders on it, which keeps the dirt from coming up over here onto your operator. And this one was pretty much painted like it is when I bought it, so I didn't restore this one. I just put new tires on it. The power steering works really good. It really took the effort out of driving a tractor. It makes it easy to take on a tractor drive. I sometimes take this one and it draws some attention. I had another 60 wide front model and I kind of wanted this single tire front end. I thought it was just different and I thought I'd have the only one around here.
And do you?
I do. Just kind of gives me a little satisfaction that I have something a little different than everybody else.
Thanks, Greg. Well, a shocking twist to the mystery illness impacting dairy cattle in the Southern Plains. How did avian influenza even enter dairies? That's our Farm Journal report next.
You're watching U.S. Farm Report. Trusted, timely, tradition.
As we reported at the top of the show, a mystery illness in dairy cattle that we first told you about last week finally found answers, and it's avian flu. The illness that's been devastating to U.S. poultry production and exports acts very different in cattle. From how it's managed to enter U.S. dairies to everything we know today, we take a deep dive in this weekend's Farm Journal report. A mystery illness that left dairy producers and veterinarians baffled in the Southern Plains now has answers, and it came with a shocking twist. USDA Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, or APHIS, confirming a strain of avian influenza or bird flu was found over the weekend.
Well, I'll be honest, this caught us all a little bit by surprise.
After APHIS officials confirmed four dairies tested positive for avian influenza, we spoke to Dr. Fred Gingrich, the executive director of the American Association of Bovine Practitioners, which is the largest cattle veterinary association in the U.S.
A strain of avian influenza was identified in some samples from affected dairy cows, and that's really what we know right now.
Gingrich says while there have been reports in Texas, New Mexico, and Kansas, three of the positive samples were from unpasteurized milk samples in Kansas and Texas. The fourth positive sample came through a nasal swab.
We have it lactating dairy cattle, and primarily lactation 2 and over is what's been reported. There have not been any reports thus far of it in young stock heifers, and we have also not had any reports in any beef herds.
Dr. Justin Smith, the Kansas Animal Health Commissioner, also telling AgriTalk's Chip Flory, it seems to be impacting older dairy cattle and infected herds.
But there's a lot of work being done now to try to better discern exactly what populations and other cows. We just know that those cows are the highest producing cows in the deal, so they're the ones showing the most adverse effects at this point in time.
The reported symptoms in Texas, Kansas, and New Mexico include cows simply quit eating and milk production plummets.
The lead symptom is that we start seeing these cows go off feed a little bit. Their ruminations, their activity tends to go down just a little bit, as well as then we will also see a dramatic decrease in their milk production. So as these cows progress, their milk production goes down tremendously.
Gingrich says once it gets in a herd, it's impacting about 10% of the herd, and milk production declines about 20% for 2 to 3 weeks. After that, the herd returns to 95 to 97% of previous production. Other symptoms previously reported in some herds include mastitis and colostrum-like milk.
Right now, the main symptoms appear to be the same. What we don't know, since this is the first time that avian influenza has been identified in a cow, we don't know if the symptoms are directly tied to the virus. What we know is that we have some symptoms. We have a disease event. And we have identified a virus in four samples. So now the investigation is ongoing, trying to tie it all together.
APHIS reporting that based on findings from Texas, the detections appear to have been introduced by wild birds.
DNA testing that they're doing on that virus is making it consistent with the flu that's in these wild bird populations out there. And we assume that the same's the case, but there is additional work being done, additional things. But right now it looks like it's a wild bird incursion on our dairies, whether it be from the blackbirds or they have on the dairy.
Avian influenza may be new to dairy, but it's taken a toll on the U.S. poultry industry, with more than 80 million birds in the U.S. depopulated to control the disease in commercial poultry flocks.
In cattle, as I have reported previously, mortalities or cattle deaths appear to be zero. We don't have any reports of cattle directly dying from this disease.
They're doing some genetic work on that, on the virus itself, and it's what we call mammalian markers that yeah. Do show that give it the opportunity to pass from mammal to mammal, and they're not finding any of those markers in this virus at this point in time.
The Texas Animal Health Commission also saying that initial testing by the National Veterinary Services Laboratories has not found changes to the virus that would make it more transmissible to humans.
There is no evidence whatsoever that this virus has ever mutated to the point where it can become a human health hazard.
The dairy industry sent out a joint release following the news, reminding consumers that milk is still safe to drink, saying, quote, importantly, USDA confirmed that there is no threat to human health and milk and dairy products remain safe to consume. Pasteurization kills harmful microbes and pathogens in milk, including the influenza virus, end quote.
Well, food safety is an incredible part of what a cattle veterinarian does. We want to ensure that the products that we work with our farmers are safe to eat, safe to drink. I'm a consumer of beef and dairy products every day. The good news is that this virus, like many viruses, is destroyed by heat. And so cooking beef to the appropriate temperature or only consuming pasteurized milk remains safe.
Now, Gingrich's advice for dairy producers is if you notice a sudden drop in appetite or milk production in your herd, immediately call your veterinarian to work through a diagnosis. And if you're a veterinarian, he advises vets to be aggressive with diagnostics. He says even though there are four positive samples, the investigation is ongoing, and so continue to work with your diagnostic labs and state animal health officials through this. When we come back, why Congress is one step closer to banning the import of beef from Paraguay. Ag Around the World is next. Now for a glimpse of agriculture around the world. The Senate recently voting to overturn a Biden administration rule allowing the U.S. to import beef from Paraguay. The resolution introduced by Democratic Senator John Tester of Montana and Republican Senator Mike Rounds of South Dakota in December. As Farm Journal's Michelle Rook reports, lawmakers say Paraguay's recent bout with foot and mouth disease raised their concerns.
Cattle industry groups red flagged the lack of inspections in Paraguay and the risk that presents to the health status of the U.S. cattle herd. That's why they fought to get the ruling allowing fresh beef imports from the country overturned.
It was an inappropriate action to allow Paraguay in, given the lack of inspections in the last 10 years of their supply chain in country and their ability to meet our high standards here in the U.S.
Imports of beef from Paraguay had not been allowed since 1997, but in November, USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service made the ruling to allow sales because the region had not reported a foot-and-mouth case in over a year. But NCBA officials say that's unacceptable.
Foot-and-mouth disease is the one we focus on, but the reality is we're always focused on those things you can't see. You know, whenever we have a trading partner who isn't able to or willing to meet our standards, that jeopardizes the entirety of our supply chain here in the U.S.
Tester and Rounds filed a Congressional Review Act resolution this month to overturn the rule. A similar resolution has been introduced in the House by Texas Republican Ronnie Jackson. I'm Michelle Brook for U.S. Farm Report.
The U.S. is back on track to ship poultry and egg products to Colombia. USDA and the U.S. Trade Representative saying it comes after several months of collaborations with the Colombian Institute of Ag to resolve a trade barrier. In August of last year, Colombia closed its market to U.S. poultry out of concerns about highly pathogenic avian influenza. Colombia is the U.S.'s 10th largest market for poultry exports. When we come back, the cattle industry continues to work on keeping foreign animal diseases out of the U.S. So what's at risk? Chip's Corner is next.
Chip's Corner on U.S. Farm Report is brought to you by Grounded. Spray smarter and improve herbicide performance with Grounded, a multifunctional adjuvant from Helena.
Welcome back. Well, Chip Fleury joining us for Chip's Corner this weekend. Chip, we talked a lot in the Farm Journal report in the news about avian influenza being detected in dairy cattle. We started talking about it on the show last week. But, you know, there's a lot of concerns right now, not only about ensuring that the milk is safe for consumers to consume, the meat is safe for them to eat, but there's concerns from some of these associations that this possibly could cause disruption in trade, and they are doing everything they can to make sure that doesn't happen.
Look what it's done to the poultry trade around the world with the highly path avian influenza. We've been shut out of some markets, whether it's scientifically sound or not. We've been shut out of some markets because of the presence of HPAI. So it's something that we need to be very much aware of. Had a conversation with it had a conversation about it with Justin Tupper, the president of the U.S. Cattlemen's Association, last week. He brought some great perspective.
You're trying to be an isolationist, and that's absolutely untrue. We'll take on anybody in this market. We believe that we raise the best product out there. We just want to make sure it's on a fair and even playing field. And when they can cheat the standards and do the things that they've done over there and proven to do, that's not an even playing field, and we're always going to fight against that.
Justin brings up some great points. It's that level playing field for beef trade around the world that is so important. When you look at South American countries and the way that they do reporting on some of these infectious animal diseases, they haven't been good global players. Brazil with BSE, they report it, but they report it months late. They're supposed to report it within 30 days. If it comes 3 months later and they continue to do trade, that's not a level playing field. Paraguay, the last time that we had U.S. officials on the ground in Paraguay taking a look at their FMD situation was 10 years ago. And thank goodness the Senate has come forward with some legislation to prevent USDA from reopening the U.S. market to that fresh beef from Paraguay. Because, Tyne, if we would import a trade disruption like FMD from Paraguay, that is a situation that none of us want to deal with.
Yeah, a lot of talk about this avian influenza in dairy cattle. I mean, we saw the impact on the cattle markets this week.
Yeah, and the way that the cattle market did react to it was definitely a knee-jerk reaction that we saw. It's the kind of reaction that you don't expect unless the funds are heavily loaded up on the long side of a market. And that's exactly what the situation was. Now that we've got that knee-jerk reaction out of the way, let's sit back, take a look at how it's really going to impact the beef situation in this country. And quite frankly, Tyne, I'm having a hard time figuring out how it's going to have a negative impact on beef. Unless, of course, the consumer starts to question the safety of the product that they're going to the meat case to buy.
Yeah, we were already watching demand, and now we're watching demand even more. All right, Chip Flory, thank you so much. You can catch Chip at 10 o'clock every weekday for AgriTalk AM, 2 p.m. Central for AgriTalk PM. We need to take a quick break, and then we'll have much more right here on U.S. Farm Report. Well, since the 1950s, fire departments across the country have used products containing PFAS to put out fires. But the United Soybean Board has announced a greener alternative, and it's made from soybean meal. Michelle Rook was in Dalton, Georgia to see the product unveiled.
A new soy-based fire suppressant has hit commercialization scale, and it's due in part to research funded by U.S. soybean farmers.
Crest Plains Solutions developed Soy Foam, the first and only soy-based firefighting foam.
It is a safer product than anything that's out on the market right now. We've just been certified green screen gold certification.
Dave Garley worked in the lab to help develop soy foam, which is 84% bio-based.
Something that's more environmentally friendly, that's healthier and safer for use. And then after point of use, it's rapidly degradable. There's no fingerprint in the environment. It goes away.
Even though the product is green, it's price competitive with conventional firefighting foams.
Right now, based on what the market is, we see that we're comparable in price and in some places even cheaper.
It's also a sustainable solution as it's made from 50% soybean meal or flour, a new use and market opportunity needed for the extra meal that will come with soy processing expansion.
A lot of the oil stock is going for renewable and biofuels, and so we're getting a lot of meal that's not being used. So any place where we can use meal and we can use it domestically, that's a huge shot in the arm for us.
And through the Soy Checkoff, soybean farmers funded research and extensive testing for soy foam.
That's one thing the United Soybean Board has really started to focus on is how do we start to make new products out of soybean meal that we're going to have more of in the future. Because, there's only so many animals that we can feed it to.
A farm-to-fire demo allowed firefighters to see firsthand how soy foam performed with different types of fires and at 1 to 3% concentrations. That included farmer and firefighter Jeff King of Kentucky.
The knockdown ability to knock down the fire we weren't able to relight it, and which was very impressive.
South Dakota's Andy Weiser also tested the product and is excited that it's less corrosive than conventional foams.
It should keep our equipment in better quality versus the trouble we were having with the current products.
Mark Krieger also farms and is on the volunteer fire department in Pittsburgh, New York. He says he's excited about growing the soybeans that make this a biodegradable product.
Like 180 days, it's completely gone, and within 18 days, a lot of it is broke down, whereas some of the chemicals they use in the foam today, they last forever.
That also means the foam won't contaminate the water supply.
Being environmental friendly, it's going to be awesome. If it runs off into the storm drains and runs out, you ain't got to worry about it.
Soy foam is also free of PFAS, making it safer for firemen like Mike McCraney.
Just gives us a safer alternative to use versus some of the other ones that are on the market that are, you know, have fluorines in them, or some of them could be being highly carcinogenic.
And so he and other firemen are anxious to recommend it for use.
We're going to, in my department at home, we're going to swap out all of our foam and go to the soy-based foam.
Soy foam, a product that goes from farm to fire. In Dalton, Georgia, I'm Michelle Roque for U.S. Farm Report.
I've heard of so many different uses for soybean oil, but using soybean meal, that's new and needed with all the soybean crush plants in the U.S. coming online. Thank you so much, Michelle. Well, up next, she works tirelessly in the barn each day in what's often a thankless job. But through it all, summer finds joy. We introduce you to this barn hero next. Well, this Easter weekend, ham may be the centerpiece of your Easter meal. And so it's only fitting that we celebrate those behind the pork. So what makes someone want to be a pig farmer? Sometimes the answer is easy. But for one woman in Ohio, a love of animals has given her an unexpected career, turning her into someone we call a barn hero.
Hi, baby.
This is what work looks like.
I'm glad you're behaving. Thank you.
For Summer Doty.
They're just warm and fuzzy, and it's like picking up a kitten.
As the farrowing manager at Isler Crest Farms in Prospect, Ohio, Doty is happy to spend her days doting on newborns.
Well, they never have a bad day. They're always happy. They're just with mom all day, happy, having a great time.
With an animal science degree and business management minor from Wilmington College, she saw this job posted on the bulletin board in 2021.
I had no idea what I wanted to do. This was a complete shot in the dark. I just knew I liked animals. I knew I liked pigs.
We are the caregivers for these animals, and at the company, we look for people that are animal people.
Boss and co-owner Nathan Isler says Summer is perfectly suited for the work.
When we look for employees, we always look for employees that are, you know, animal lovers. It doesn't matter what species or what form, whether it's a pet at home or livestock. You can't teach somebody to care for animals. And if they don't care for animals, they won't care for the animals the way that they should. Summer is an animal lover.
Growing up on a farm and raising a few litters of show pigs helped feed the itch. But Summer admits a production size operation is different.
I had no idea what I was getting into. It's never what you think it is.
And the variety is part of the joy she finds in the job.
They're not helpless, but there's a lot of things they can't do and a lot of things you can do to make their lives simpler and better.
The thing that separates her from the rest is the fact that she is so easygoing.
Easygoing, even on days that aren't perfect.
It's not good to carry stress from day to day with you, especially when things are going bad in the barn or you're having just a bad day personally. It is good to go home and decompress and try your best to forget about the day.
Knowing that tomorrow,
you'll be a big baby.
She'll be right back here.
They always ask, are you having a lot of pigs? Are you busy at work? It's the same. We have the same number every week.
Caring.
We don't have a slow season.
For the day's newest litters.
I know, what are you doing? They bring a lot of joy to my day, and it's definitely a highlight of working here.
I could never believe that.
A giving spirit.
You go back to bed?
Earning Summer Doty the title of Barn Hero.
I'm so sorry to disturb you.
At Isler Crest Farms.
What an amazing story. Thank you to Clinton Griffiths for that. Well, that's all the time we have this Easter weekend. Next weekend, we are on the road. We're heading to Lubbock, Texas for the Plains Cotton Growers annual meeting where we will have a live taping. So if you're in the Lubbock area, we would love to see you, but we'll showcase that next weekend. Well, happy Easter to everyone. Thank you so much for joining us this weekend. Be sure to tune in next weekend as we work to build on our tradition. Have a great weekend, everyone.
U.S. Farm Report is produced and distributed by Farm Journal Broadcast.